Hello, Heartland Pod fans and listeners. If you're new to the pod, thanks so much for tuning in. My name is Rachel Parker. This is an episode of Let's Have a Chat, where we sit down with candidates, stakeholders, decision makers, activists, policy wonks, all kinds of people. And this week I was fortunate enough to have some time to sit down with Akayla Lacey from The Intercept about some writing she's been doing. About the various challenges against Cori Bush, especially the one mounted by Steve Roberts Jr., who is unfortunately my state senator. And before we go into the interview, my colleague and friend and partner Adam Summer often does what he calls an opening statement. I'm going to do a modified version of that right now and talk a little bit about my reflections on this race before we get to the interview with Akayla. And I was thinking about this after I finished talking to her, because we spoke a lot about sort of the issues behind why two men in particular, Steve Roberts Sr. and Lacey Clay, my former congressman who was whose reign over Missouri's first congressional district was disrupted by now Congresswoman Cori Bush, who is now my member of Congress. And, you know, it would be one thing if I thought that these two people in particular were advocating for her replacement because they thought she was incompetent. And while they may have their own opinions about what her positions are, I genuinely don't think that they think that she's incompetent. I think that they don't have her last name. Roberts Sr. and Clay, I think, see themselves as the sires and holders of a legacy position in my community. And make no mistake, this is about them being able to extend that legacy. Roberts himself has dallied in politics for a long time, and his son has had basically a political career handed to him by that father because of their vast amounts of wealth and influence. And Lacey Clay's father, of course, famously used to represent this part of St. Louis in a very different time, in a very different era. And Clay, the son, basically inherited that role from his father. And I think what both of these men want is not so much to govern, to have any sort of dictates over how the area is per se governed. I think they just want to die knowing that their legacies are intact. This is about name. This isn't about talent. This isn't about competency. This is about influence, and especially the influence when it comes to how they see their names reflected in the history books in St. Louis. And I think it's not going to work. I think it's an embarrassment. And I'm really, really, really pleased and honored that Akayla gave us the time to sit down and talk about why it's an embarrassment and why I think it's going to fail. So with that, here's my chat with Akayla from The Intercept.
Let's have a chat.
So welcome back to the Heartland Pod. We're here for Let's Have a Chat with a new guest to the podcast, but someone who I've spoken to before and whose work I follow and like quite a bit, Akayla Lacey from The Intercept. Hi, Akayla.
Hi, Rachel. Thank you so much for having me on. It's great to meet you, too.
Thanks so much for being here. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for bringing me on.
Of course. So why don't you talk a little bit about what you do at The Intercept and your background as a writer?
So I am a politics reporter at The Intercept, coming on being there about 4 years now. I cover a lot of congressional and electoral politics with a focus on progressives and the left. I also cover criminal justice and campaign finance as well.
So then you will have been following Cori Bush's victory and how she disrupted the Lacey Clay dynasty, the Clay family dynasty, before the story that you originally, the first story that you wrote about Steve Roberts.
Yeah. So a lot of the focus of my coverage and that of my colleagues at The Intercept is on sort of the growing number of progressives who have been elected to Congress, you know, since 2018 with Rep. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez toppling Joe Crowley in New York, and a slew of other similar ousters you know, the quintessential quote unquote squad and additions in recent years. The focus of our coverage this cycle, though, has sort of shifted to the money behind some of the challenges to those people and connections with the Democratic establishment with those folks. And then in other races, you know, where we're talking about safe blue seats, where there's a progressive challenger and sort of an establishment or more centrist candidate. So in that context is sort of how we've been covering the primary against Cori Bush. This is her first primary challenge since she took office in 2020. You know, sort of just giving more context, I'm sure people know this, but that, you know, her defeat of William Lacy Clay in 2020 ended his two-decade career in Congress, sort of put an end to his long-held sort of political domination in St. Louis and the surrounding areas. That was her second attempt to unseat him. And since then, he and his allies have been, you know, closely sort of very vocally opposed to her, and then sort of, you know, behind the scenes working closely with the folks who are trying to unseat her this cycle. So the first story that we wrote about Steve Roberts was about, we got a tip that someone had been removing allegations of sexual assault from his Wikipedia page using an IP address on the grounds of the state capitol in Missouri. The backstory here, obviously, is Steve Roberts is a state senator, but he's also the Democratic whip in the state Senate. And somebody ostensibly, you know, someone with a capital IP address was removing these allegations, not once, but, you know, two, three times after Wikipedia editors, which I learned a lot in this story about the high level of scrutiny that information, not on every Wikipedia page, but at least that the editors give to information and edits made on the page. And so, yeah, people who had been making comments that some of the removals were unsubstantiated. And then there was addition of information that tried to paint him in a favorable light. So we wrote about that story back in March. The next month, there was, this was after, you know, the tragic death of former state rep Cora Faith Walker, who had accused Stephen Roberts of rape back in 2016. He gave an interview to a local CBS affiliate, you know, after her death, denying her, you know, again, denying her allegations, which he's always denied publicly, and also revealing that he had settled a lawsuit with her, the terms of which were saying that neither of them could talk about this. And so it became clear that at that point he had come forward because the other party to that settlement could no longer, you know, take action against him should he discuss it. And people had been circulating it and talking about it again, obviously, because he, you know, is running for higher office, which his campaign, you know, says is being planted by Cori Bush supporters, when in reality, people in St. Louis have been, you know, raising alarms about his behavior in relation to those allegations for a long time. So after that interview that he gave, we then wrote another story. The second woman, the other woman, the first actually allegation that had been lodged against him by a woman named Amy Harms, who has since come forward publicly with, you know, her claim that he sexually assaulted her by groping her and trying to put his hand inside of her underpants at a bar in 2015.
And also threatening verbally to destroy her career while he was drunk at a professional networking event. It's not like they were hanging out. I just want to clarify that Amy is a professional attorney. She was, I believe they were both, I can't remember exactly what their professional connection was at the time. I'd have to look that up. And I apologize for that. I should have really been more prepared for that. But anyway, they were in a professional context. He got really drunk, groped her, basically, like, then also verbally assaulted her and told her that she was nothing or something like that. Like, pretty horrifying stuff. And she understandably called law enforcement at the time and tried to pursue. So for people that are not aware of this, Amy did try to pursue a criminal complaint against Steve Roberts, which was thrown out. And then because she was unsuccessful in that venue, she then went to the civil courts to, you know, essentially exact some form of justice out of him. And that is the settlement that then you talked to her about. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. Okay. So it's my understanding, you know, she was a law student And I believe that he was at the St. Charles County's attorney's office at the time of the allegation. But it was like, you know, it was like law students going out for a drink. And I think he was there. I'm not sure what his connection to the group was. But yeah, so she reported that to the police. The special prosecuting attorney in that case declined to charge him eventually. That prosecutor, I will note, was recently arrested for a DUI. And then Roberts is, once the story about the $100,000 settlement was picked up, you know, Roberts came out saying he didn't pay the money. It was, you know, the company on his insurance on behalf of his family, which, you know, we have in the story. But, you know, again, at the bottom line is that the complainant in that suit received $100,000 settlement in response to her claims that he physically sexually assaulted her. Nonetheless, his campaign has, you know, continued apace. He has been, you know, holding fundraising events. I believe some protesters showed up at one of those events. And I think he was at, this was before he actually launched his campaign, but he was at, you know, some signing there. He was at some event, you know, for naming a street after William Lacy Clay, who was asked about these allegations at the event and, you know, was reportedly very angry and said, you know, he's known Stephen Roberts his whole life. And, you know, that he would not do something like that.
Give us time to grieve, he demanded, we're the ones bringing up Cora Faith Walker's name because we're all bored and just like we're not the ones that are slandering, like as if we're the ones that are slandering her posthumously and not the people that are supporting his little lapdog to disrupt Cori Bush's success. So speaking of Clay's revenge tour, you and I spoke, we chatted briefly on maybe like an hour or so after the first story that you published about Roberts, about when you interviewed Amy about her settlement. We kind of connected on Twitter. I think we chatted before, maybe we DM'd back and forth a little bit before. And I just said, you know, if you ever want to talk on, you know, talk on background or whatever about kind of the vibe in St. Louis and what's really going on, that'd be great. So we talked for about an hour. And I remember specifically saying to you, like, just so you're aware of this, what this really is Lacy Clay's revenge tour against Cori Bush for no other reason except that she took his prized possession away from him, which was his congressional seat. And he didn't get to retire on his own terms. And that pisses him off. And Lewis Reed is still pissed off that Tashara Jones took the kind of coveted position of mayor away from him. And maybe somewhere in the background is also Lyda Crewson, who was also basically forced into being a one-term mayor because progressives in St. Louis changed the way that we vote in primaries to get rid of people like Lyda Crewson. And so like this kind of, so I just kept saying the word revenge tour, revenge tour, revenge tour. And then last week, I will say this, St. Louis Twitter blew up because KSDK ran a story about Lacy Clay saying Lacy Clay's revenge against Cori Bush continues, and then talked about these two, what are essentially Roberts family organizations that are funding the two, both a 501c4 and a PAC that are supporting Steve Roberts' reelection efforts. And they are the only moneyed organizations that are supporting Steve. His own individual fundraising has been abysmal. Essentially, the only individuals who are contributing to his campaign are Lacy Clay's sister, Lacy Clay, and Steve Roberts' dad, right? Those are basically like the biggest individual donors. And then there's
Lacy Clay's former communications director.
Oh, yeah, there we go. Yes, Engelhardt, is that his name? He's another like well-known St. Louis character. So that being that campaign finance, progressive politics, and people that are working against progressive upstarts in Congress are kind of your areas of interest, this is kind of the trifecta, right? Like this is just like this is hitting on all cylinders. So just talk a little bit about the information that you learned from the KSDK story and then kind of how you did a little bit of further digging into it.
Yeah. So the KSDK story was great. You know, they interviewed Paul Zemich, who is the, you know, who was running the Yihad PAC, this new PAC that is sending mailers and just dropped a bunch of radio ads against Cori Bush. But we had been working on a story about that PAC for a while, and I had worked with a freelance reporter who was at Jewish Currents, writes for us, you know, from time to time, and had interviewed the same guy a while back, and we were looking for ways to collaborate on the story, but we were waiting for them to file their financial reports, you know, ahead of the primary. And so And again, we had been, you know, obviously following Roberts's campaign and expecting that, you know, some money was going to come in, you know, because his family has, you know, bankrolled, you know, his state and local campaigns for the most part, expectations that that would happen. He's also loaned himself $135,000, which is, you know, a substantial portion of the amount of money that his campaign has raised so far. So with the KSDK story, we confirmed that, well, they obviously wrote about the fact that Republicans were funding the group. The reporter that I had worked with, had this kind of freewheeling crazy interview with this guy where he talked about that same thing and said, you know, there are some Republicans who we can't get on board basically because they want to be able to, you know, basically do everything they can to tear Corey down in the general. But they think that she's a good target, basically. He used some far more unsavory terms in describing that phenomenon. But basically,
yeah, there were like dog whistles just going up all over those comments. So just to clarify,
yeah,
the person that you interviewed who's affiliated with this Yihad PAC,
yeah,
which is a five, or it's actually Yihad Group. It's a 501c4, right? That's actually like a nonprofit. Is that correct, or is that the actual PAC?
Yihad PAC is, yeah,
it's the PAC. Okay.
It's the 501c4.
Correct. Okay.
So it's the PAC. Yes.
Right. So they have basically like the ability to spend money in elections however the hell they want. And just to clarify, what this character told you is that Cori Bush is more valuable to Republicans as an elected official because they can use her to point to her and be like, the angry black lady is going to defund the police or whatever nonsense they want to, like, you know, use her as, or accusing her of being an anti-Semite or whatever the vibe of the day against Cori Bush is, so much so that they do not want to be involved in campaigning against her in a primary. Right. And that there, it's not like there's anything that Steve Roberts offers as a Democrat that's going to be all that valuable to a Republican, even if he's eventually elected to the House of Representatives, right? Like, he's probably still going to be pro. I mean, he's had some questionable votes on choice here in Missouri, but, you know, you can probably look at, like, he's going to do, like, Roberts is the kind of guy who, while I think he has no business being in the United States House of Representatives at all, I don't think he has any business being in the Missouri legislature either, but here we are, he's my senator. He will do whatever party leadership tells him to do, probably. The guy doesn't have an imagination. He is not someone who won his way into politics the way that Cori Bush did, which is, you know, basically by pounding the literal pavement with volunteers. He bought his way into politics because his father is wealthy and has a lot of connections. And so Dad Roberts was able to be like, okay, son, you washed out as a city attorney. You washed out in your military career. So let me buy you a job in the Missouri State Legislature, which is a fine tradition in Missouri politics.
Hey folks, Adam Sommer here. Just wanted to remind you, you can get signed up for our Patreon. You can get links to all of our shows, information about our hosts and what we do over at heartlandpod.com. Sign up for our Patreon. You get extra episodes, extra access. You can also follow us on all the social medias, Facebook, Instagram, and of course on Twitter. We love to interact over there with @theheartlandpod on Twitter. Just search for us and find the three leaves. Any place you find podcasts or social media, we'll be there. Give us a rating if you can. 5 stars. Really appreciate it. And now let's get back to the show.
So going back to the article, how surprised were you that this, you know, kind of, I mean, this is somebody who you would think would be a little bit more playing the cards a little bit closer to the vest when you finally, I mean, it was like reading an interview with like Krusty the Clown or something. I was like, this guy just has abs, is completely kind of unvarnished in the way he sort of talks about fundraising.
Yeah. So, I mean, actually that's been an interesting sort of, theme in some of the other coverage that we've done, you know, in other races, especially this cycle. We've also been covering the primary against Ilhan Omar in Minnesota, her primary challenger similarly holding fundraisers with open Republican operatives and saying, you know, we want the big tent, we want to bring everyone in, which again, you hear sort of that echoes of, you know, the line from the National Democratic Party about, you know, trying to pull in conservative voters or trying to pull in folks in the middle. And so, yeah, I think it is kind of hilarious though, because it just shows the disconnect where, you know, they don't think that that's a bad thing. And obviously the most salient argument against that is, you know, you're simultaneously telling us that these are your biggest obstacles to getting anything done when you have a trifecta, but you want them, you want their input, you know, on how to win elections or how to grow your margin. And so for some people that the hypocrisy is very clear. For others, they think, you know, they think we're the ones who are crazy, right?
Well, and I think what really the point this out, there's an adage, which is now a cliche, that all politics is local, right? And let's be clear, like, there probably are people in the National Democratic Party who are based in D.C. that look at Cori Bush and roll their eyes, but this movement to unseat her is highly local. I mean, these are people, and it's, I really genuinely believe this. It has nothing to do with her policies, right?
Right.
It isn't because she's standing up against rich people, or it really is because this guy has an ego, and he thought he was loved, and he thought he was respected. And he thought that he was this guy that people in St. Louis needed to be successful. And she's done more with less in a very, very, very short amount of time in a way that he could not. And because she is someone who has helped, we were talking about this before we recorded, that there were substantial power vacuums in St. Louis and an utter lack of substantive leadership for a very long time. And part of that is because Lacey Clay was such an absent congressperson. He was actively involved, from what I've learned, since I've only been in St. Louis since 2017. And I learned not long after moving here from a couple of staffers that worked with Claire McCaskill that indirectly and off the record that, like, one of the reasons that the Missouri's first district is so gerrymandered is because Lacey Clay wanted a safe seat, because we were, the last time Missouri was redistricted, the St. Louis Metro lost an entire congressional seat. We used to have three, now we have two. And so, like, a lot of that has to do with him. So he's had this huge command over what the district looked like, what the dynamics in the district were, who held local power. And doing this all from his brownstone in D.C. and, like, very rarely coming home. He did one town hall during the midterm cycle that represents Trump's first, you know, 20, whatever, 18 months in office or something. Lacey Clay couldn't be bothered to come home and do more than one town hall. And the town hall that he did was embarrassing. I was like, this guy doesn't know it. Like, he mispronounced Nunez's name. He called him Newts. Yeah. And it, like, he seemed angry that people had questions about the Westlake landfill project, which, if you're in St. Louis and you know anything about what that is one of the albatrosses in for local stakeholders who live in the north part of the district. It's an old landfill. There's a fire burning underground. It was completely mishandled. And he had a pretty good explanation when he finally, this is during the town hall, he finally had a good explanation for what was going on, but it showed that he was so disinterested in connecting with his actual constituents that they just didn't know what he had done. He'd been doing stuff to kind of handle this problem, but he's such a terrible communicator that he didn't bother calling any of the local activist groups and stakeholder groups that had been trying to get the EPA's attention for like 20 years about this thing. So I was like, okay, so he's never here. He doesn't know anybody. Nobody has a relationship with him. Nobody trusts him. Everybody's mad. And this is one of the, this is somebody who's should be standing up for people during what is really arguably the first kind of Americans' first official slide into dictatorship. Right. And he was just kind of shrugging his shoulders like, yeah, Trump, I don't know. Yeah, he's a jerk, whatever. But this Nunes guy, it was like a comedy of errors. It was ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So I just want to clarify that, because I don't want people to listen to this and think that I think that, like, Nancy Pelosi is, like, trying to get rid of Cori Bush. She might look at her and be, kind of roll her eyes a little bit, because that's Nancy's way. But, like, I don't think this is not her doing. This is not the National Party. This is our own problem. If you could talk a little bit about, like, the smattering of FEC violations and possibly IRS violations that these two utterly sloppy groups might be facing, that I think that would also be really interesting, because not only are they doing a terrible job of running a challenge to her, to Cori Bush, but they're also doing it in a way that might be fundamentally illegal, right?
Mm-hmm. So the issue, you know, that we had a question about is, obviously, you know, PACs cannot coordinate with candidates. In this case, you know, the fact that the father of the person who is the opponent of the recipient of these attacks is, you know, has been the manager, is a member of the company.
I'm sure they never talk about it, Akayla. They never talk about this over dinner or like on the phone. Like, Dad, how's the pack going that I can't know anything about? Don't ask me that, son. Like, of course, like it's so comical. And that's why I wanted to bring this up. Like, it's so absurd to think that there's no coordination on behalf of the campaign. There are PACs that do okay things in the world. Like, I'm not a fan of dark money, but there are ways that unlimited campaign finance does do things for candidates on the left sometimes, right?
Yeah. And the key piece of this is like, that's one piece of it. But the other piece that's even more, you know, damning is that this other group, Progressives for Missouri, the treasurer is actually Stephen Roberts's campaign treasurer and his business partner. So, I mean, that is clear. You know, that's a 501c4. You know, that the rules are a little bit different there, but it's the same network of people who are all, you know, orchestrating this and then, you know, all at the same time trying to distance themselves from it. But yeah, the issue in question for the Ahad PAC, you know, was the potential coordination. And also they missed, you know, several FEC the FEC filing deadline. They had gotten a couple of requests for additional information, which is not uncommon for PACs. It's not rare necessarily either. So it's, you know, there, the why that was of interest in this situation is because obviously their first report, it came, you know, within, I think, 2.5 weeks before primary day. So giving them, you know, the maximum possible time to sort of just to conceal who was funding the operation by sending that report at a later date. They had a bunch of ads that they purchased that they haven't had to disclose yet because it was, you know, 1 or 2 days after the filing deadline, which is not, there's nothing, you know, illegal about that, but it's obviously strategic in not allowing people to be able to see the public records on that unless they're looking for it. But yeah, I mean, the most hilarious part of this whole thing is that SCD Investments, which is this corporation that is the primary funder of Yihad PAC, you know, I think there's like at least 10 LLCs with that same name, like SCD 1, 2, 3, 4, all of which, you know, have some sort of link to Stephen Roberts Sr. And which have contributed to not only Stephen Roberts Jr.'s state and local campaigns, but also his father's, you know, run to get reelected to the St. Louis City Board of Aldermen. So that's it in a nutshell.
I think after this, your former colleague and maybe still friend Sarah Sirota has been on a couple times to talk about more the Senate race. And after she came on, after she talked about Trudy Bush Valentine's ties to the Veiled Prophet organization and how Trudy Bush Valentine had been a debutante crowned at the Veiled Prophet Ball. And she went into an in-depth kind of very quick synopsis of the Veiled Prophet organization and what it's linked to and its links to the Klan and white supremacy. And after she went into this brief but very deep explanation, I was like, well, you're honorary STL. You can write honorary STL. So now I bestow the same title onto you. I think now that you know that much about Steve Roberts' father, you officially are honorary STL. I don't know if that's a title you want, but it is yours to do with as you wish.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm like, I don't know if I want to know as much information as I do about this family, but I appreciate that nonetheless.
Well, yeah, hopefully this will be, you know, there's a very good possibility that he'll have a Senate, that he himself will face a primary challenger when his Senate term is up for re-election. I have to deal with him for another 2 years as my state senator. He's a terrible Missouri senator, by the way. And anybody who's endorsed him, who's a friend of his, they know who they are, like, you should be ashamed of yourselves. He's not even good at what he does. It's pathetic. So before I let you go, I would love to hear your reaction to this because you write about dark money and you have now fully enmeshed yourself in one of the grisliest sides of our primary season. And we're going to, if you don't mind, I want to shift you over just for a second to our Senate primary. And we have two very good We have quite a few Democratic candidates who are trying to vie to be the Democratic candidate for Senate, mm-hmm. and for U.S. Senate. And I personally have endorsed Spencer Toter, and a lot of other people are very aware of who Lucas Kuntz is and his efforts to kind of create kind of an interesting conversation around populism during the cycle. And the candidate that no one in progressive circles is particularly excited about is Trudy Bush Valentine. And I'd love to just get your reaction to this. So she had not done any public events for like months. She would like send videos to like, you know, whatever local Democratic committee or whatever was having their, you know, charity dinner fundraiser. And, you know, Lucas is there and Spencer is there and all these other people that are running to be in the state legislature are there. And no Trudy Bush Valentine, she sends a video. So she finally made an in-person appearance for the first time. I think it was last. I don't know if it was last week, the week before last at this point, but it was at one of the milkiest white Democratic township meetings you could possibly have gone to in the entire metro area. She went to Chesterfield, which is like saying like you went to Westchester or something. Like it's just like the most like the safest possible area for her to do a town hall in. And a member of the crowd said something that you can't really quite understand, but it was clearly about campaign finance reform and about Citizens United. And her response was, and this is what I want to get your reaction to. Her response was, remind me again what Citizens United does.
Yeah, I heard about this.
Okay. Oh, so it did bubble up to you.
I saw a video, I saw a clip of the video, and then I saw some people had been like tweeting about it. And like, we wrote a story about it the other week, but I actually hadn't had a chance to fully process it. So you are getting my unvarnished reaction.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's obviously it's just hilarious. Like, you know, Democrats, their main priority bill, you know, under Trump was a major campaign finance reform bill. You know, it's been something that the party has talked about for a long time, you know, whether or not there's been teeth behind their efforts. But, you know, Citizens United is one of the most important decisions, you know, of our lifetimes, which sounds kind of strange to be saying given the most recent decisions, but we live in crazy times. And yeah, I think it just underscores, you know, the lack of seriousness of some of this stuff. You know, you have one of the wealthiest people in the state, probably, you know, with all the political connections you could possibly want, you know, families, longtime political donors, you know, saying, you know, don't worry, I got this. Like, just, you know, just if everyone falls in line behind me, like we can fix this. We can get another Democratic senator. And like, even the most basic of concepts.
Third rail, one of the major rails, one of the major rails of Democratic politics right now is like dark money in politics.
Right. Something that's purportedly supposed to be, you know, a bipartisan issue. Right. Which is what her whole thing is about. You know, I'm putting politics aside, but you know, that's not how they work, boo.
So before I officially let you go, I wanted to ask you a little bit about, speaking of the Senate campaign and speaking of Trudy Bush Valentine. So her family has hosted fundraisers for not just Republicans, but two of the most conservative Republicans in the state that are currently running for Senate, and not just any, but Eric Greitens and Eric Schmidt. So there were two different groups that requested to host fundraising events at the estate that she co-owns with various members of her family. So we understand that like she doesn't get to veto every single, I think did the right thing and said like, do not hold an NRA fundraiser at Grant's Farm while I'm running for Senate, you idiots. But not long after that, you guys ran a story about two different fundraising events, one for Greitens and one for Eric Schmidt. Both of them are terrible human beings and have no business being in the United States Senate in what is a very difficult time. So I'm just curious like how that came on your radar, and if you want to maybe just give us a little bit of a short synopsis on that mess as well.
Yeah, so there had been at least one story that mentioned the Greitens fundraiser, and then we heard, you know, from another source, you know, in Missouri politics about the Schmidt fundraiser, and you know, in the context of my former colleague Sarah's reporting on this race and the Bush Valentine campaign, you know, we knew that after, you know, she had reached out and after we published the story on the NRA fundraiser that Bush Valentine said, you know, once I learned about this, I persuaded the board to cancel the event. Which is notable because her campaign told us, you know, that she doesn't have any control over the events that take place at the farm, but she is one of the five members of the board, along with her other family members with whom she purchased the farm. So clearly she has some influence there. She decided to wield it in one scenario and not the other. Her two brothers were the hosts of the events for Greitens and Schmidt. They're both major donors. And so I think one of the brothers has also contributed to her campaign, which is also just like, what's going on here? But again, not surprising. And so, yeah, we published that article. And again, this is another thing where it's like, you know, she is campaigning on, you know, pushing to codify Roe at the federal level, has got a recent endorsement earlier this month from Pro-Choice Missouri, campaigning as somebody who will protect the right to abortion. And, you know, has been pretty vocal about it actually on Twitter and in the wake of the decision. Clearly just another example of, okay, well, like, I think the underlying message is, if you can't be expected to sort of stand up against your family in a situation like this, how can people expect you to take that stance in Congress when you're working with people who you're with every day? And again, obviously her line is putting politics aside, but you know, you can't, you're saying one thing and doing the other. And also at least one of the fundraisers, they had to pay the farm to host it. So there's the question of, you know, did she receive any of that money? We didn't get that. I don't believe that we discussed that, but you know, it's in his FEC filings that they paid the farm for the event, which again is understandable, but it's just, you know, being held accountable for your position in something like that.
It's almost like these are things that you should have thought of before you decided you were going to run for the U.S. Senate. I'm just saying, anyway. Well, thank you so much for clarifying that. And I cannot thank you enough for spending the time with us today. And I hope that you'll decide, since you're officially writing STL now, I hope that you will come back again and talk about us or talk with us again about other stuff down the line. Because I think that one thing that we talk about locally is that Steve Roberts was an audition of sorts to see how these group of very well-connected, very wealthy, very entrenched power players, who I think just don't like being shunned from their cash cows. It's worth mentioning that these people are all very connected to Louis Reed, who was just indicted for various bribery scandals. So the chances are very good that if they fail this time, it's because they know that this is kind of a shot in the dark and they're just going to see how it goes. And we can assume that whether or not it's this exact configuration of people or people that are indirectly connected to them, we'll probably have this to look forward to definitely during the next campaign cycle for sure. So hopefully we'll be able to talk again, or at least, you know, again, on behalf of St. Louis, thank you so much for helping us hold these people accountable.
Yeah, thank you for wanting to talk about it and for bringing me on. And I'm certainly happy to keep talking about this stuff. I know there's so much going on at the local level that I'm learning about and that you've been a great resource on. So yeah, happy to come on anytime. And thank you again for your interest.
Thank you.
The Heartland Pod is a production of Midmap Media, LLC. Follow us on Twitter with @TheHeartlandPod. With email, you can reach us, heartlandpod2020@gmail.com, online with heartlandpod.com. Subscribe, and please sign up for our Patreon with patreon.com/heartlandpod. Become a podhead or an official podgressive today and unlock all of our content. See you at the next show.